I'll say, meanwhile, back at the Legion of Doom, I'll be taking my time coming up with an answer.
Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week, we are talking about something that you might be interested in, something that you might get caught up in, and something that might kill you. We're talking about cults. And I have two fantastic first-time guests on the show this week. Our first guest, he is an artist, a voiceover talent extraordinaire, and an actor. You've done all sorts of stuff, right? I mean, you're dynamic.
Yes, mostly stage and audio.
Great. And yeah, so our first guest is Ken Penn. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nate. It's wonderful to be here. I'm very excited.
Thank you so much for being on. This is going to be exciting. Our second guest, she is an artist also, as well as being the once and former host, maybe future host, of Symphony for the Devil on AM 1190. It is LJ Davis. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
All right. So thank you so much for being on the show while you are at an airport, which is, this is the most exciting and exotic recording location I've ever had for a guest. It looks absolutely crowded in there too.
Oh, you know, I found a quiet niche. I'm not sure what's going on back by my terminal, but yeah, here I am.
Great. Well, good. Okay. So if for any reason your flight gets bumped up, you run and get that flight. You don't have to finish the show.
No, for sure. But I want to add, though, that I'm existing completely in a space of liminality, right? This place is, no one lives here. Right. But I think it's absolutely ripe for the birth of cults. Weren't the Hare Krishnas once known for like hanging out in these spaces and taking advantage of people as they hang there in that limbo between worlds?
Oh, yeah. Courting people. There's the Stephen King story, The Langoliers, is essentially about the liminal space that is the airplane and the airport. Right. The idea that you exist beyond traditional time. Now, granted, in that story, they actually break out of time altogether, and then these sort of world-eating, basically time in that story consists of monsters that devour the past as you move forward, and they become unattached to time, so they see these monsters coming and have to try to escape them. It's pretty interesting. Don't watch the miniseries or the TV movie version of it, because it was horrible. And the CGI at the time was, you know, 1992. So imagine just a bunch of little Pac-Mans coming across the screen. You're supposed to be like, oh, yeah, Balky from Perfect Strangers is afraid of them. I get it.
That's beautiful, actually. You know, you have to qualify horrible. Is it good horrible or bad, bad horrible?
Oh, man, it was bad, bad horrible before, but I haven't watched it in so long that it might have transcended to good horrible.
Could have aged well.
Yeah, I mean, it could have aged into a cult status of its own.
Yeah, there we go.
So yeah, we're going to talk about cults this week. So I'm going to start with the opening question, which is, imagine, each of you, that you're starting a cult of your own. What is yours about, and how are you going to avoid the common pitfalls that tend to bring cults down?
I would say definitely sex, you know. Like, I get to have all of it, right?
That's what the cult's about.
It's a tenant, I suppose.
Okay, sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah, beyond that, I don't know. All right. That's a starting point. Building blocks.
See, I think I would build a cult of commodity, right? You do something that is, like, kind of maybe preying upon people's nostalgia a little bit, possibly tied to like Beanie Babies or, you know, some similar type phenomena that people are just going to get nuts about purchasing things. And then all the money comes to me. And, you know, eventually the commodity commits suicide, not the members. And that's right. A way of getting around the pitfall of the cult.
Yeah, you don't have to deal with the death part. You're basically Amway. You just get people to buy and sell stuff on your behalf. And yeah, and then you just close up shop, run away with the money, and there's no more remnants. I mean, honestly, you're onto something with the Beanie Babies thing too, because if you could find a way to sort of cultize that predisposition, that existing audience, there's a bunch of people who still have Beanie Babies that would love to feel like they did the right thing. And if you could be like, hey, I'm your savior. I'm your Beanie Baby savior. The one that you thought was coming in the form of money, but I'm coming in the form of a person. And so you need to give me your money and then all will be cleansed. There you go. I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah. You know, your common pitfalls for cults tend to be the paranoia, the physical and sexual abuse, the things that result in drawing a lot of attention, right? You want your cult to stay on the down low to an extent. Like it needs to be like indie band popular where nobody knows about it, but everybody wants to know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say exclusive, like popular and yet exclusive simultaneously. Right. And it's something that I think can be like, can recruit members everywhere. So I think there would have to be some kind of like a secret online way to get in. And like, once you're in, like you have to kind of maybe build up to the level of actually getting to purchase the Beanie Baby by purchasing levels, kind of a la Scientology.
There you go. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. There could be going like sort of like the Om Shinriko. There could be videos and a lot of like cute and fun things, even though there is truly a black heart behind it all, which is capitalist free market will and drive, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing it's missing is what Ken mentioned for his cult, the sex. So Ken, how are you going to get out of that situation with the pitfalls and things?
The pitfalls of a sex cult or the pitfall, or what is the sexual pitfalls of a Beanie Baby cult?
You know what? The thing about the Beanie Baby cult is that it's like actually like a sexual substitute for lonely people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that is
source of sublimation.
Yeah. But it's also like a quality that can grab people, although it won't be mentioned.
Right. But yeah. I mean, Ken, you're in an interesting spot because if you have a sex cult, then you're going to have people who get upset when they're maybe feeling abused by the sexualization or the lack of commitment, follow through, things like that. It's a tough spot.
Yeah, it kind of is a tough spot. I mean, it's like the Mormon church sort of figured it out. Like,
create friendships among the various wives and then normalize the transactional nature of the sex.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like maybe what I'm saying here is like in fundamentalist Mormonism, which I think is considered a cult, that it's not like the culture or like the packaging, I guess, is like wholesomeness, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's family oriented. It's family, right?
You're building your forces, yeah. Romantically.
Yes.
Wasn't Joseph Smith killed in Indiana, or was that Illinois?
I don't know. I think it was Illinois. I don't know. Good idea. Where Google? Where are you?
Yeah, his infidelities landed him 6 feet under, but. I see where you're going with this, Ken, but how then do you get to be the cult leader getting all the sex? It doesn't add up.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very flawed concept. I guess I hadn't thought that through. I mean, look at all the my admirers, you know, that are thronged around me.
Well, you know, not every cult's going to be perfect. Great job, both of you, on the opening question. I'm going to give you each 1 point. And we're going to jump into round number one. So, LJ, do you have a vague idea about the Branch Davidians?
I sure do.
All right, what talk about it.
Talking about Mormons, look at this, and a Mormon pops up. They were like a radical group of Mormons led by a guy, David Koresh, who, as far as I know, he had a gang of little girls he liked. They tried to do something like was it a doomsday cult ultimately, or they were collecting arms, and the U.S. government turned on them, and there was a stand down in Waco, Texas, where Janet Reno told them, take the flamethrowers in and just burn them all to death. That's what I know about the Branch Davidian. David, correct.
Very good. Ken, do you have anything to add about the Branch Davidians?
From what I read, like, Branch Davidians became a thing in like the early 20th century. And they, at their prophet based, like before David Koresh came along, there was a woman, I can't remember her name, but she was their prophet. And then, yeah, David Koresh is not even his real name. It's some biblical something. I know, how vague is that?
That's good.
Biblical something or other. He is played in a movie by Taylor Kitsch, who is like a sort of a sort of charisma challenged leading man type. But there's
he's muscle adept.
Yes. Also, fun fact, like, Michael Shannon is in that movie as well, and he is fucking awesome in everything. Yep. I think
he is.
Was he a Mormon, or was he one of the feds?
He's one of the feds, yeah.
Ah.
There was like somebody else in it too that was like really impressive, and I'm like, this movie's so boring and terrible, but yet it has an amazing actor. You know, there's no crappy parts, really.
Was it made for
Netflix,
TV?
I think.
Fascinating.
What else? There was a Netflix documentary, or was it on Prime or something, but where, you know, actually had his voice, and actually had a nice singing voice, played guitar. It's kind of a rock star rebel who was like able to like just like talk fast and loose with the good word.
Yeah, that's very good. You both did a great job. So it's the Branch Davidians are an offshoot of the Seventh Day Adventists, not Mormons. Yeah, I mean it's kind of close, kind of theoretically close. But they were founded in 1935, so Ken was right on the early part of the 20th century. David Koresh's real name is Vernon Wayne Howell. Got one of those three names, which means murder boy. And so, yeah, he basically takes this church, gets everybody really concerned about the, you know, basically the country coming after them. This happens sort of in the wake of like Ruby Ridge and a couple of other instances where the ATF is dealing with people in the woods. So he basically kind of takes advantage of that opportunity to get everybody afraid. He's been kind of having a prima noctra sort of relationship with everybody's spouses and daughters and everything. Like, he just gets to do whatever he wants. And 51 day long standoff takes place with the U.S. government that results in the compound being burnt down, as we all remember, back in 1993. So yeah. One of the weirder cults, one of the more prominent cults to go up in smoke in my conscious lifetime, at very least. So great job, both of you. I'm going to give you each 2 points.
Whee!
All right.
Tied, Ken. Tied. Wonder Twins.
It's close. It's staying close. Yeah. Who's gonna break away? So, Ken, yes. Round number two. Do you have a vague idea about the Ayn Rand Institute?
The Ayn Rand Institute. Ayn Rand was a feminist capitalist. Is that right? like
sort of. I mean, I don't know that she'd be described as a feminist, but yeah, but definitely capitalist.
She was definitely capitalist. I mean, I would think of her in like feminist terms just because she was like in her right, a sort of like well spoken and respected person. But I, the Institute, I don't, is it a think tank of some sort?
And very good.
That's what I got.
Right. Great. That's excellent. Good, good work. LJ, the Ayn Rand Institute.
They came about as an offshoot of her sort of philosophic cult called Objectivism.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a lover who carried it forward after her death, I believe. And they were such vile kind of libertarian types, right? They were so far on the right and very, very much anti-communism, anti-left. They didn't, you know, she came from Russia and she was very opposed to all things communist. Did they feed into the Red Scare somehow? I don't know, but that's what I know.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. The Ayn Rand Institute came about in 1985. So post Red Scare.
Oh.
I mean, we were all still scared at the time because it was still late Cold War, but you're absolutely correct. Yeah. It's a think tank. It still exists. It's in Irvine, California, and promotes objectivism, which in short is the idea that the only thing that actually matters is your individual maximization of happiness, that there is no other reason to do anything, and that if you're maximizing your happiness, you can't possibly do wrong. So it leads to people believing in, you know, absolute rugged individualism, you know, fear of any sort of socialism or communism, and fear of any kind of anti-capitalism, any kind of communal thinking or group activity. It's all just scary to objectivists, and they inform our politics of the day. I mean, very, very strongly. It's kind of terrifying. It's kind of terrifying.
Absolutely.
So yeah, great, great job. LJ, 2 points. Ken, 1 point.
Okay. All right. Now it's a game.
Now it's getting real. And it's time to play our first game. It's time to play Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Okay.
So each week on Fuck, Marry, Kill, I present three options. And you just have to tell me who you're going to fuck, who you're going to marry, and who you're going to kill. So this week we have three cult leaders. I don't know if I can call them charismatic necessarily. They were certainly charismatic for some. But your options are Charles Manson, Jim Jones. Yeah. Oh, Charlie had to come up eventually. Jim Jones and L. Ron Hubbard. So, LJ, who are you going to fuck, who are you going to marry, and who are you going to kill?
Oh, God. In that situation, I would have to say, you know, my instinct says to just kill L. Ron Hubbard, but you know what? I'd marry him because that fucker, he lived a full life. The Scientologists are still rolling forward. Money is still coming in. And, you know, it was like they had orgies and stuff. You wouldn't be stuck with, sorry, the airport. I'm walking a little. You're not like confined to just L. Ron. So I would marry L. Ron Hubbard. To that kid, there really was, and I'd kill the Reverend Jim Jones because he was just like an amphetamine freak who, you know, I mean, like he had some revolutionary ideas. I do think Jonestown was misinterpreted. It was possibly trying to be like a utopian leftist commune, but I'm not interested in Jim Jones and his ego.
No.
Give me Charlie's ego for like a minute for like a love affair. And then I'll marry L. Ron Hubbard. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, you could be the head of Scientology now, and maybe you steer in the right direction. I don't know. While
Dude,
still continuing to make a lot of money.
And people would worship you as the former spouse of L. Ron Hubbard. You know, if you're the former like a former Manson girl, John Waters might include you in one of his films, which I would dig, but. Otherwise, like, you know, you just don't, you're like on your own. You probably would have been in prison for 10 years too.
Oh, yeah.
And if you were anything to Jim Jones, chances are you would have drank the Kool-Aid and
You'd have been gone decades ago.
Good night.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great answer. Ken, who are you going to fuck? Who are you going to marry? Who are you going to kill?
Oh my God. Well, strange, because I would definitely marry L. Ron Hubbard because of the, you know, the stability, property, you know, income, and servants, lots of servants, I think.
Yeah. You got a whole ship's worth of people who are just ready to give you stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and the boating. Oh my God. Just a vagabond life. You know?
Style. Yeah.
And then obviously you got to kill Jim Jones because he's a egomaniacal, like just really abusive person. I mean, even though, People's Temple is like well-intended because it is like an egalitarian, you know, racial, everything was the idea, right? Was egalitarianism. But obviously, I don't know. From what I know and I've seen of Jim Jones, he just seems like a kind of gross person. And of course, fuck Charlie Manson because he's got the Iggy Pop fucking hot bod. And, you know, he's fucking wild.
And he's hanging out with Dennis Wilson at the time. So you're going to like a killer party, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to hang out with the Beach Boys at least once.
Totally. And all the drugs you want, all the good drugs.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Great answer. I mean, you're both absolutely correct. I can't argue one bit because I mean, the reason, the logic here is as sound as it's ever been. So you each get 2 points.
Great. And the Wonder Twins, we mirror each other. It can't be helped.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just going to be those times when water's a little more viable than turning into a bird, I guess, or whatever.
Right. Like you can turn into an ice jet versus a toenail.
Yeah. Sometimes a toenail is really valuable.
Yeah.
But not always.
Especially when you're walking in the dark.
Yeah. Oh, man. So let's hop into round number 3. Ken, we'll start with you. Do you have a vague idea about cult classics?
I do. I have a vague idea about cult classics as a category in like art history, I guess. You know, like as portrayed as like art forms such as cinema, theater, you know, musicals. I would say opera, classical music, and you know. Yeah, all kinds of music, actually, I would say have like cult-ish aspects. Like, and I guess how I would articulate what is cult is that maybe it was, I'm not exactly sure how to articulate it, but it's a thing that is like loved, forgotten, loved again for, I don't know, same or different reasons. I don't know. It's something that is partially bound in nostalgia. But yeah, I think that's ultimately it.
All right. That's great. Yeah. That's great. LJ, cult classics. What can you say?
So I think it is a category of film, which is the type of movies that, had a following. Maybe they weren't the best. In fact, often they were low budget or quirky, but then they have a following years later. Like you could say the first of the George Romero zombie films, Night of the Living Dead, that's a cult classic. You could say that Liquid Sky, which I love, is a cult classic. It's movies that, B-movies, I think, that maybe were undervalued at the time they came out, or maybe not. Maybe they were kind of popular, but they were strange, and they continue to have a following to this day.
That's very good. Very good. Yeah, you're both correct. I mean, I think that Ken hit on an interesting thing, which I think it does include other genres of art than just film. There, you know, you think about Arrested Development, for instance, is a show with a cult following, right? It was canceled, but the cult following brought it back. You also have things like Twin Peaks, where there are 2 seasons of this show on TV. more than 20 years ago, but now it is one of the most like probably watched and talked about things among people, just because it's it has this imbued value around its strangeness, around its ability to just be itself. Rocky Horror is usually a cult classic. I mean, I feel like a lot of the designation comes from, again, it's like a capitalist designation. This didn't make money, so therefore it wasn't popular. So therefore, if you liked it, well, it had to be a cult classic rather than it being, you know, something that was merited in some other way.
Maybe the fandom, now that you say that, has a lot to do with it. It's like the fans are just fanatical.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, how many people do you know that dress up like Twin Peaks characters for at the drop of a dime? I know quite a few. And people who, like, you know, maybe devote like years of their lives to like analyzing and thinking about and, you know, watching and rewatching. And I think
Trekkies.
Ooh,
Yeah. You have a serious devotion. You have, you know, anybody who immediately, you know, sips coffee and says, oh, that's a damn fine cup of coffee. Or anybody who would just quote a strange movie like Plan 9 from Outer Space, for instance, just like straight on through. There's devotion to this property. It's possibly the safest kind of cult there is, to go back to the opening question, which is, you get around it by just making weird art that people like, even though you don't ask anything in return from them other than to pay for it initially. And then eventually maybe they do anyway.
Hey. Yeah.
So yeah, great job. 2 points each on that one as well.
Yay. Coming for you.
It's getting real.
You're still under 1 point, but... Let's see who's really like knowledgeable about cults. Let's bring it.
We're getting into real cult stuff here. So this question for round number 4, LJ, do you have a vague idea about the cult of personality, or a cult of personality?
The personality, isn't that tied a lot more to politicians? They're culture makers though, right? Yeah. I mean, you can say that like anybody that has an influence over a large group of people. I think of like Justin Bieber with the like Beliebers and stuff, right? You could say he has a cult of personality. Trump definitely freaking did. Yeah, that's my answer.
Yeah, very good. Ken, what can you add about a cult of personality?
A cult of personality is a song by late 80s, early 90s, like all black rock group Living Color. fun fact. they also did, that was their one, they were one hit wonder basically, who also did a cover of Sunshine of My Love. But what the cult of personality is, obviously it's like a, you know, this fabricated sort of facade, a sort of romance of status, or like in a case of a politician, it's like there's a certain polish, there's a certain uniform, you know, fucking haircuts. And I mean, I guess really, like, it just, in some cases, just like willful stupidity. And it's, I mean, it's, when it's good, it's good. When you don't agree with it, it's not. It's like, so it's like kind of a hazardous thing either way. I mean, you can say like, oh, JFK was the best. And then, you know, you could say, well, hate fucking Trump, and that should be obvious to anyone who has who is breathing.
Yeah, if you're awake.
Yeah.
Alive and awake.
Yes. That
was a great answer, especially the Living Color song drop, which of course Color spelled with a U here. We gotta remember that. A cult of personality is generally arises when a country's regime uses an individual or uses techniques of mass media propaganda, the big lie, spectacle, patriotism, stuff like that. It usually does involve just constant flattery and adulation and praise of a leader.
Oh, so gross.
Yeah. So, terrifying. You know, your Stalins, your Mao's, your Trumps, they're all in a cult of personality where instead of it being about doing anything or even being about the country as a whole, it's simply about this figurehead in whom we've bestowed all this sort of almost godly power. So yeah. Great job. 2 points each. Yeah. So now it's time to play our second game. It's time for the Thunderdome.
Oh.
Each week in the Thunderdome, two entities face off in a battle to the death. And this week, I am asking you each to tell me who wins in a fight between the Rajneeshis and the Raelians. The Rajneeshis of Rajneesh, what was his name?
Osho. Is that
yes?
Then
okay. They started a commune in Central Oregon. Yeah. That caused the whole blow up. There's a documentary about it on Netflix called Wild Wild Country. Very interesting. But they, you know, famously poisoned some salad bars with E. coli to get voters sick so they wouldn't vote against them. And they had guns, though they never really shot them, as far as I understand. And then the Raelians are a group of folks who believe that humans originated from alien scientists who once came to Earth in UFOs. So who's going to win in a battle to the death between Rajneeshis and Raelians? LJ, what do you think?
Definitely the Rajneeshians. Okay, they're not just about like belief. Their dude was real, and they still managed to do like these horrible actions. They had all kinds of infighting. If they had turned that outward, which they did with the salad bar and stuff, I think they were tough as nails. A lot of them were like the worst of those saboteurs and like, you know, people, because I think that they tried to kill their leader's doctor by like injecting him with some poison at a festival. I mean, they were like assassins kind of. I mean, you didn't mess around with them. I would say them, but then again, I don't know much about the other group. So there you go. That's my take, Ken.
I love it.
I think it's maybe a toss up because while the Rajneeshis, like they did become like really militarized, right?
Yeah.
And like they wore like the black uniforms and at one point, right? So obviously, and they poisoned the fucking people of the county, right? So, or the town. So obviously they're very action oriented and they're not afraid to fuck shit up, fuck you up to get what they want. But the Raelians, obviously, you know, they could have secret technology. Weren't the Raelians the ones like in, God, was it like around 2000? Actually, they said they announced a cloned human child, something in Hollywood, Florida. And
oh, wow.
I think that's, is that true? Or
let me, I'm going to look. I like it either way.
I think so, because I was in Florida at the time, like working on a project. I'm like, and Hollywood was right. I was right the fuck there. I'm like, what? That's crazy.
They did. That's awesome. Yeah. Well done.
Thank
so,
you.
So if they've got cloning ability, they have an infinite army is what you're
yes,
saying here.
And yeah, they can, and they maybe they have energy weapons. I mean,
yeah, they've got alien weapons. They can clone as many forces as they want. Yeah, yeah.
So the Rajneeshis just, I mean, eventually will run out of ammo and then they'll be overrun by Raelians. Maybe if they can clone fast enough.
Are you kidding me? The Rajneeshians would make bullets by hand. They would find a way to make bullets out of mashed potatoes. I'm not kidding. They're brutal. I still put my money on them. They're not just stories about cloning some kid. They are.
It is true. Okay, I'm gonna counter that with the Raelians. Well, being secretive, let's say, you know, because no one has met this child, as far as I know, yet. So maybe it's the Messiah that they're raising up here.
they're in Florida. They're in the shadow of the Scientologists, right? Like, and they also don't have any, like, maybe they have many scandals behind the scenes, but I think it says something for a group to still exist despite the level of scandals that the Rajneeshians produce. There's like a strength in that.
It's a good point. You know? That's a good point.
That's a good point. That is true.
Yeah, and the Raelians did fail to produce, or to at least allow testing on their cloned child.
Right. Yeah.
Which is the whole thing. I mean, that pokes holes in the potential for it. But if it worked, I mean, amazing right, force. Like,
look over there.
Yeah.
What child? Where? I don't. Yeah.
We hit him behind the couch. Don't worry about it. Just it's walk right. away. Well, hey, great job, both of you, on the Thunderdome. I loved your answers. I'm going to give you each 3 points.
Oh,
they
my
were
God.
So they were such good answers. And you argued so well. I can't even begin to unravel all the iterations of this battle that go down. You know, you've got thousands of babies with lasers that just try to use a communal water supply that has been poisoned and they all die. But then you also have like a bunch of cultists dancing and having orgies, and then a bunch of babies just come storming in and blast all of them. It's beautiful and horrifying at the same time.
Just rappelling in on the umbilical cord.
Just, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
There's a lot of give in those cords too. So you're really, you know, you're gonna have a nice soft landing, baby soft landing.
Nutritious too.
Yeah, it's got your field rations built in. And now, from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. We alluded to this earlier, talking about the sort of cult of Beanie Babies concept. But capitalism is a cult, isn't it? We're all adherents, trapped in a feedback loop, raising our infallible dollar. So what do you think of that? Feel free to rant and expound and or disagree with me. Whatever.
Oh, laissez-faire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leave it alone. Don't touch that shit, right? Just let it fucking be, right? And that's the theory. But I mean, in a pure fucking capital system, right? But there is no level playing field. I mean, anybody and everybody would fucking gain advantage on the fucking field. I mean, so but it's a military, it's a war like philosophy, I guess.
Yeah.
Capitalism, you know, when I think of like tying it to France, I think of the Situationist International and Guy Debord, who wrote the book Society of the Spectacle, and how we're all you know, completely indoctrinated because they've managed to commodify our leisure time, you know, by like pulling us into this visual culture. We're all just like doing marketing research constantly. Every click we make online, every thing we are looking at, every dollar we lay down, now we are all zombies. You know, you're born into this cult and you don't even realize you're a part of it. And then there's no escape, you know, like you fall into the life of wage slavery. Even celebrities, when they have to spend hours and hours and hours just sitting and talking about like robots, about like the clothes they're wearing, what designer, dot, 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 because they have sponsors, yeah. You know, it's ugly. And Guy Debord committed suicide after he wrote his book Notes on Society of the Spectacle, because he saw no end. He saw no end. Here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's an interesting thing, because we are all sort of brought into, to Ken's point, it would be lovely if capitalism were designed to reset generationally, like, or even like, hey, everybody who's born starts with the opportunity to just do something, right? But we're far beyond the time where you would say, oh, cool, I just want to grow corn and sell corn on the open market to people. Well, you can't, because there's, you know, there are commodity prices for corn, and there's all sorts of other crazy stuff that's connected to all of this that prevents you from participating in a non modified and supplicated sort of way. And yeah, and to LJ's point, it's bred this world where we all decide what to do based around working. Like, life is predicated on making enough money to survive, which means that there are things controlling your life that, you know, whether you agree with them or not, or whether you think that, oh, well, I could quit any day and just find another thing. It's like, no, you can't even really do that anymore. Maybe you could do that in the 60s, but you can't do that anymore. So yeah, we're all sort of tied to this horrible religion of commerce. If you're not buying, you feel it. Buy things just to feel better. You know, retail therapy is a thing, and that's like tithing to an extent. You just get a wash with comfort for making purchases, and we're all guilty of it. So yeah, it's wild.
Something that I've noticed that's kind of weird is that about money anyway, or like the fact that, well, I mean, it's like, why is my value like so, like, is so variable? My value to society has like, sure, so much variation based upon like what someone's willing to exchange for it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, you know, I used to have a market price that was like twice what I'm going for these days, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just the psychological toll of the exploitation involved in, you know, if you did something that was popular and needed 10 years ago, but it no longer is, well, you're suddenly not valued, and society doesn't have a baseline inherent value for you, because you're supposed to like create your own value, but you can't, because you're not allowed to create your own things, really. I mean, you can, but it's one in a million that the thing that you create becomes inherently valuable to everyone else. It's a mess.
It's such a loaded game too. I mean, it's like, you know, you in America anyway, like global capital is a whole nother mess when we start looking at, like, you know, the conditions of workers and the disregard for, like, you know, just basic human rights to produce like junk, you know, to be sold in more industrialized, or like the advanced industrialized nations like the US or Western Europe. I mean, I would love to rant about this, guys, because I'm very politicized, but I,
oh yeah, oh me too.
They're actually starting to board my freaking plane.
Okay. So,
is there anything we can do to wrap it up on my end? I'm really sorry. I wish I had more time tonight, guys.
That's okay. So here's the thing. We can try to do the final topic real quick if you think you've got enough time to run through.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Let's do it. So great job on La Chose Francaise Arbitraire. You're both getting 2 points. Now we're going to jump into the final topic. So LJ, do you have a vague idea about prosperity theology?
Yeah. I think maybe I'm totally off base, but I think it like goes back to what Max Weber wrote in his book, like The Spirit of Capitalism, right? And the Protestant ethic. So we're talking about like this notion that people are predetermined, or like, you know, they're chosen by God to have, you know, prosperity, that like good things happen to good people. Mm-hmm. And it's like inherently like structured into capitalism, at least in America, to where, you know, people criminalize the poor. And a lot of it goes back to this like Calvinistic view that, you know, it's already been predetermined by God, like if you're a good soul or not. But I may be wrong. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, no, I think that was very good. Ken, do you have anything to add about prosperity theology?
No, I think she covered it. She did fine.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. I actually don't have much to add, other than really what I know about it is that basically if you're rich, you deserve it because God loves you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if people are poor, that's their fucking fault for, you know, get off the dope.
Wise words. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Prosperity theology is often referred to as the prosperity gospel. It is in essence saying that if you're in God's good graces, if you're doing well, you're in God's good graces. It's basically a blanket excuse for becoming wealthy, despite the fact that everything Jesus talked about was nobody who's rich can go into heaven. Let's flip these money changer tables over. But we're going to repurpose religion to make it so that you can both go to church on Sunday and not take care of your neighbor and have a Rolls Royce and feel like a good Christian at the same time. It's a real mess. You both crushed it. And it is one of the most terrifying things about again, politics in this country in a lot of ways is based on this cult of thought. So great job. LJ, 3 points. Ken, 2 points. Yeah. That means that LJ has won with 19 points.
Oh my goodness.
Ken, you had 17 points.
I got to run, but nice to meet you, Nate. Thank you so much for letting me participate. I'm excited. Tell me what I won.
Oh, hell yeah. Thank you. All right.
Thank you so much. So I didn't hear. What did I win?
Okay. So everybody who plays and wins a vague idea is sent cash on delivery, several thousand pounds of brand new marbles. The driver is armed and is instructed not to leave until you pay. So you'll see those in 6 to 8 weeks. And you'll just have to accept them, I guess, because that's how it works. But congratulations on the win. All right.
Amazing.
Ken, thanks for being on the show. I'm sorry you didn't get to win this time, but you made a hell of an effort. Is there anything that you would like to plug? Is there anything that you want people to know about, to do? Anything you've got coming up? I know we're still in a weird zone where there's not a lot going on, but
I do believe I am going to be involved with Tiki Oasis San Diego this year, wherein I will be peddling my wares, so to speak, which are sculptures, tiki sculptures. The venture I've decided to call it Icon Tiki because it's sort of like tiki interpretations or characterizations of iconic people, you know, sort of.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, so it's a paradigm. It should be a lot of fun. I invite y'all to come on out, sit a spell, and I think it'll be a fun time. There we are. And hey, always come check out my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/KenPenn, KENNPENN.
Great. Yeah, I'll put links in the show notes for the episode too, so that people can get to it easily. Yeah, that's super cool. So tell me a little bit about the Icon Tiki. Like what name three or four icons that you've made.
Well, it has been an evolving thing. But towards the end here, I've got a number of them that are finished from like last year when I was making them. And amongst that is David Bowie, or like a Ziggy Stardust kind of like tiki totem thing.
Cool.
And Gene Simmons. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was thinking, I'm in like concept mode with that right now, just in terms, I know how to do the carvings and the process for building them and all that. It's just kind of a question of, selecting the correct characters and then, you know, making them tiki, you know, appropriately a tiki.
Sure. Sort of thing. Yeah.
It's the world.
There's a lot of art to honor with making them look sufficiently in the tiki style, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. There's like definitely. There's like so many different ways that it can be expressed. There are some classic tropes that, you know, are to be employed. But the question is like, how do you employ those and make an evocative, recognizable image?
Yeah. Know? Yeah. That's fascinating. Well, yeah, I hope people will check that out. I'll certainly be looking to see what they look like. Do you have pictures online anywhere on the Patreon or anything?
I do have some on the Patreon, yes.
Great. Perfect. Then, yeah, I'm going to look it up. I'm interested. This is very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah, thank you for being on. This was a lot of fun.
I had a great time myself.
Great, good. And listeners, if you enjoyed this show, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out a lot. You can also check out all of our social media imprint. We've got the Instagram, we've got the Facebook, we've got a Facebook group and a page. We also have a Twitter account. If you like our theme song, please check out Michael J. O'Connor's music at michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. He's a prolific songwriter and has a lot of really wonderful albums out that you can listen to pretty much for free, but you should give him a little bit of money. If you're just looking for more podcasts to listen to, we have three other shows on our network. We have Roll for Blank, which is our actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast. We have Funky Spunk, our Sex and the City podcast. And we have the Hard Pick Mining Company, where each week the Denver Five talk about the Denver Nuggets to figure out how our basketball team is doing and try to sort out where we're going and where we'll be this season. So, Ken, thanks again for being on. And LJ, thank you so much. You're not here, but I'm thanking you because it's an audio medium and no one will know the difference. We have all had a vague idea about Colts this week, and that's a good thing because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I love it.
The Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page and sometimes John Peros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Gorkowski. You can find Spaceboy Books at readspaceboy.com.